You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
Well, yesterday, spent the whole day in Las Vegas, about 45, 50 miles from where I live. I actually grew up in Vegas. As it turns out, my girlfriend's birthday is tomorrow, but yesterday we decided to go to Vegas and celebrate, and it was good times all around. I have a daughter who is 20 years old, and she goes onto this thing called Groupon. It's like a group coupon sort of thing. You know, she had gotten a couple of different things for me over time. She is one of these people who's a master at being able to use the internet to find free stuff and cool events and things to go to. Like, she gets movie premiere passes to different, movie screenings that happen in Las Vegas two or three times a week. Different places she signs up for. So anyhow, went to the Sahara Hotel, which has this kind of a NASCAR experience thing, and they have the simulator drivers and this really neat roller coaster that's there and some other cool stuff. So we went there and played around, had some fun. Walked down the street, or ended up going to another place called the Palazzo, which is a nice casino. My girlfriend has a very specific gaming machine she likes to sit at and play, and she's always won at it. However, yesterday it skunked her, no big deal. Walked around, saw the white lions and the white tigers and the white everything else that they have over at the Mirage and the dolphin experience, and she just loved that. Had a great time. She just wanted to walk around and see all these majestic animals. It was neat, good stuff. Walked around the strip just a little bit, went into the form shops at Caesars. She got one of those, you know, half-yard pina colada things and was just joyous and happy as could be. And then used another one of these Groupon things my daughter got me. Went to this really nice, newer, sort of a chic-ish Italian restaurant. And I have to tell you, the service there was absolutely impeccable. And I don't think that the oldest person working the service floor could have been 24 years old. As a matter of fact, our server was 21. Most of his help was, 18, 19 years old. Maybe the hostess was 23 or 24. Maybe it was a young crowd that was actually working the floor, but impeccable, absolutely impeccable, very polite, professional. You know, the type of folks that don't actually have to come up and start asking you a bunch of questions. Guys, stand back and actually see what was going on and observe your table from a distance. Like you weren't really aware that he was there. I'm just usually much more aware of my surroundings than the average cat. And, if there was anything, they'd come over, they, refill your water, whatever. And it was very unintrusive. Reasonable prices for a nicer high-end restaurant. And, everything worked well. I ended up, me just being the way I am, but they had on the menu a wild boar, like how you can get like shredded pork at any kind of a Mexican restaurant. Well, this was kind of a shredded pork, but it was shredded wild boar, and it was served over a couscous pasta, which was just excellent. I mean, just excellent. Good all around. My girlfriend had this lasagna that they make, a meat lasagna, and they added like sweet peas to the lasagna, which was unique. She liked it quite a bit. Anyhow, that was all good stuff. Come home and we all around had a good day yesterday. So even though tomorrow's actually her birthday, that was kind of her birthday outing, and it all worked out well. We had good times all around. Good stuff. So today it's back on the JOB. We'll be going back out to my buddy Dave's house, Dave Patton, who actually filled in for me last March and part of April, I believe, when I was on set as a cast member for the show Top Shot, shooting that. He sat in here on 2A Radio as a kind of my guest replacement host while I was off shooting that in California. We're going to go do some practice for the Handgun Combat Masters course, which we have coming up in the early part of October. So anyhow, back on the job today. We have plenty more coming up. We're going to talk about really the anti-establishment, anti-gunners, and some of the things they're posting on the internet right now when we come back. So stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, and you're listening live right here to 2A Radio.
It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You're listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Morning, everybody. We're going to get right to it. And Sun Tzu's The Art of War, basically, he's telling you, know thy enemy. You have to know your enemy. And our enemy, as pro-gun people, are anti-gun people. The Coalition to Stop Gun Violence is one of them. And they have an online blog. And they posted this, I think it was on Sunday. I believe, no, Monday. Monday, I think they posted this. And it says, the NRA jokes about shooting government officials. That's the title of it. So we know this is coming from the enemy. So this is really where they're working this. Let me read this to you. It says, when National Rifle Association President Charleston Heston hoisted a rifle above his head at the organization's 2000 convention and shouted the words, from my cold dead hands, listen to this, they said, there was no joke about it. He was conveying a serious threat by expressing the organization's belief that the Second Amendment provides individuals with the right to take violent action against our government, one bullet at a time, they have that in quotes, when they deem it has become tyrannical. Since the conservative wing of the Supreme Court gave legal backing to this dangerous intersectionalist idea in 2008, there have been a significant number of violent acts by those who fear and hate our government. So you can see, this is the opening paragraph of this, right? This is the way it opens. So we're in the process now of trying to understand, of knowing thy enemy. Now, the NRA, I have been a member for many, many years, and the main reason I remain a member is for my $35 a year, I get insurance on my guns. I can't find any better gun insurance policy than that. I have noticed that the NRA, over the last several years, has become much more of an organization that plays politics than actually does quite the right thing. Such as, here in Nevada, we have Sharon Angle running for U.S. Senate against Harry Reid, who is a Senate Majority Leader. Harry Reid has done a few things that the NRA has liked, that they've asked him to. And they've donated, you can donate up to $5,000 to his campaign when you're an organization. They donated $4,950, so $50 less than the maximum. But they wouldn't endorse him. They came out, we're not endorsing Harry Reid. But they won't endorse Sharon Angle either. So they're compromised. They're a compromised organization now, not the fighters they used to be. So, I have been a member, however, for a very long time. And I have never gotten anything from the NRA, even as an NRA certified instructor that sends out different things to their instructional staff, that says anything about how the organization conveys or believes that we are expressing a serious threat on and the organization believes that the Second Amendment provides individuals with the right to take violent action against our government one bullet at a time, whence the government has become tyrannical. That has never been a mantra of the NRA. And they say the conservative wing of the Supreme Court gave legal backing to the dangerous insurrectionist idea in 2008. They're talking about D.C. versus Heller. First of all, the Supreme Court didn't give anything. What they did was they recognized that the Second Amendment is a right. They didn't give anything. And it was the founding fathers that recognized that the Second Amendment should be there for in case the government turns tyrannical. So, continuing with this blasphemous post, the NRA, however, now appears to find its advocacy for insurrectionism humorous. In a bizarre new video released in late August as part of its Trigger the Vote campaign, a group meeting is being held to discuss what should be done about the government coming to take away people's guns. An old woman in the group is an expletive filled, goes into an expletive filled tirade reminiscent of Heston and states that if the government wants her gun, they'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. Martial arts expert and celebrity Chuck Norris then bursts into the room and tells the participants that, quote, there's only one way to protect our rights, by registering to vote. The use of Chuck Norris as a voice of reason is curious, to put it mildly. Just last year, Norris told conservative radio and TV host Glenn Beck, I don't use guns for hunting. I'm not a hunter. But the thing is, it's for protection. If the government decides to become a tyrannical government or our guns are to protect us, I'm sorry, our guns are to protect us against that. And that's really what the Second Amendment is all about. And he's absolutely right. Norris even warned that in March 2009, that a second American Revolution, actually it'll be a third, will happen if the State of the Union continues to turn into the enemy of the state. Norris clearly burst into the insurrectionist ideology in his new ad, so cautiously dismisses. Now, here's the thing. Sorry, I'm stumbling over this. I've got a thought I want to get to, and I'm, you know, running over my red words here. Here's the thing, guys. The Founding Fathers, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution itself, the Declaration of Independence, all speak about the people taking control of their own lives, creating their own representative form of government through a republic. And if that gets out of line, and the people who are part of the government, running the government, who are the government, create the government, are the elected or appointed officiating body within the government, become tyrannical, it's our job to either vote them out, if that doesn't work, to take them by force. There is no hidden agenda. It's in all of these founding documents and founding papers by our founding fathers. Why? Because they had seen so much happen in their lifetimes. They knew that this would be essential for protecting the republic, keeping ultimate power and authority to the people. That is why one of the provisions of the Constitution is that there shall be no standing army. What do you have today? We have a standing army. Why did they not want to have a standing army? They wanted to have the militia, the people, be the standing army. Why? Because the standing army, the army, which is not supposed to be organized for any more than 2 years at a time, made up of the people, if they had a standing army, it was a job. It answers to the government. And if that government says, go rough up the people and keep them in line, that's what the army does. You can only imagine if that actually happened. How many people would actually, in the military, would actually keep their oath and not do that? Well, one of the reasons there's not supposed to be a standing army, not to crush the people who are saying, look, you, the government, are out of control, and we're going to throw the bums out. So we have somebody who just simply doesn't understand this. There's a lot of people like him. Continuing on, they say, the Trigger the Vote campaign is a sharp departure from previous NRA rhetoric and raises questions about the organization's motives. The NRA's embrace of insurrectionism, formalized through its amicus brief in the 2008 D.C. v. Heller case referenced above, has received significant press attention as of late, particularly after armed Americans began to appear at town hall meetings, presidential speeches, and other political events. The NRA might be trying to distance itself from this type of behavior with the Trigger the Vote campaign. It is also undoubtedly attempting to reach out to more moderate swing voters before a critical midterm election. Even long-term NRA supporters, however, are beginning to question its wisdom on the subject of guns, democracy, and freedom. No, it's not. Democratic Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, who has done much to advance the gun lobby's agenda, very little in fact, recently ran ads against Republican Senate candidate and Tea Partier Sharon Angle that strike directly at the insurrectionist idea. In one ad, the president of the Peace Officer Research Association of Nevada, scumbag lefty actually, states that the Angle's Second Amendment remedies are so clearly called for armed resistance and denounces them as crazy and way over the line. This goes on and on. Now, here's the deal, guys. Sharon Angle did not get up and say anything about we should take up arms against the government if they don't get their stuff together. What she did was she said, people out there, if the government doesn't get it together, are considering Second Amendment remedies towards their government. All she did was let them know this is a movement which is afoot. There's a lot of talk about this. And she's absolutely right. I can't go a week without at least two different people telling me something along that same lines. Sharon Angle was merely, if you listen to the actual audio archives, she was merely informing the interviewer about that. Look, people are talking about this. And it's critical. Either we get this done through the votes and the government gets back in line, or the people are talking about this. That's what she's getting across to them. So, now we have Sotomayor and Kagan joining the other couple of lefties on the Supreme Court. We just need to make sure that we don't go any further down the leftist line, because otherwise, what we're going to end up with is we're going to end up with a Supreme Court that's so left they forget everything about the foundation of this country and the Constitution, which created it and by which we operate. Stay tuned, guys. Plenty more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
All right, guys, welcome back. I get an email from a listener by the name of Jeff. He says, Bill, I've been kicking around the idea of a Glock 21, which is chambered in 45 ACP. I've heard randomly that it's bulkier than most Glocks. He says, do you own or have you handled one? How does it handle, and is it too actually bulky? Well, I just looked into the catalog, and its dimensions are the same as the 10 millimeter that you own. I own a Glock Model 20. So I guess the question really boils down to handling and bulkiness of the 10 millimeter or 45 versus the 9 millimeter 40 caliber, the full-size guns, which would be the Model 17 or 22 series. Thanks for your time, Jeff. So, let me answer that. I have owned a Glock 21 in the past. I sold it to a guy that was actually a student of mine. I do own a Glock 20, which is dimensionally the same gun, dimensionally, on the outside. The only difference is the actual round itself. The gun is bigger, and it is bulkier. Longer case dimension, it's a larger gun. It's the standard original Glock Model 17 is a 9mm gun. The same exact exterior dimension gun as a Model 22, only it shoots a 40 caliber round. They made the guns bigger to handle the 45 and the 20. So their full-size 45 ACP and their full-size 10mm auto are the Model 21 and 20, respectively, and they are larger guns. However, the Model 21 came out with the 21SF, or 21 short frame pistol. What they've done is they have narrowed down the actual stock of the gun, the handle, the grip area. They've actually narrowed that down to where it is very similar to a standard Model 17 or Model 22 Glock. Still shoots the 45 ACP. They also have an ambidextrous magazine release that you could release from either the left side of the pistol grip or the right side of the pistol grip. That molded, injection molded polymer plastic stock of theirs. So you can release it from either side, which is a nice feature. You have to generally, on most guns, most regular size guns, you have to adjust or break your firing grip to get your thumb around to hit the magazine release. If you can reach down and use your middle finger on your firing hand, just underneath your trigger finger, to release that magazine release, that's a nice feature. A lot of guns have that. For instance, the H&K USP, Heckler & Koch USP. You have it's actually a toggle that goes down that's at the very back end of the trigger guard right where it meets the frame of the gun. Now, the Glock is a little further back, actually in the frame of the gun, to the forward edge of the frame of the gun. So, Jeff and anybody else out there, if you want to carry a full-size 1911, you like Glock, you can carry 13 rounds plus one in the chamber, total of 14 in the gun if you so choose, and you can get the Glock 21 SF, or short frame, and you don't have to worry about the bulkier-sized stock holding onto the gun and shooting it, because they narrow it down. They re-engineered it. So there's the answer for you. The best of my knowledge, they have not done that with the Glock Model 20, which is the same gun but chambered in 10mm, which is fine. I mean, I'm a full-size dude. I'm 6 foot tall. Depending on what scale I'm on, I'm between 204 and 222. It's weird. I have a doctor-style scale in my bathroom that, you know, I actually move the weights around. And that says I'm 204, and then I've got a digital scale in another bathroom that says I'm 222. I don't know where I am. I really have no idea what I weigh. Anyhow, somewhere between those two, I'd imagine. But the thing is I don't have a problem with the full-size gun, Model 21 or Model 20. My Model 20 is actually my house gun. You break into my house at night, and most likely, you're going to get lit up with a 10mm Model 20 Glock. That's what's going to end up being sent your way with a little smiley face, is a 10mm round. I've got 200 grain solid truncated cones. They're not hollow points. I'd like to get penetration rather than expansion. I got a light on the gun, and that thing is physically attached right where I sleep, right next to my bed. If anybody busts in my house or creeps into my house, it shouldn't be there. I got a light on the gun, and I've got plenty of firepower inside of it, and it is loaded with 15 rounds. The Model 21, the 45 is 13 rounds in the magazine. So mine is 15. That's what I have loaded up. Now, if I have a chance to get to one of my long guns, I have a couple of long guns that are not far that are set up for me to grab. However, if I have to get from point A to point B while you're down the hall, I've got that Glock with me in case I need it. So anyhow, to answer your question, Jeff, is the Glock 21 too large? The standard one in a lot of people's hands can be large. However, I believe I know Jeff. He's at least my size. He is a former Marine, good guy, done a little bit of training with him here and there, and very, very solid guy. As a matter of fact, he bought one of my NFA trusts, which you're about to hear about at the end of, segment after next when I have my commercial playing. Good guy. But, again, if you're happy with the Model 17, Model 22, the standard size guns, not the extra bulkier ones, you can get the Glock Model 21 SF. Available at FFL dealers all across the country, and I'm sure that you could get one off a gun broker or Auction Arms or some other online medium such as that. So there you go. Hope that answers your question. Stay tuned, guys. We got more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
Hey guys, welcome back. I have another question from a listener and a guy that I have met several times by the name of Quince. Quince is just just a top-notch individual. Quince is just a wonderful guy. Last May, first and second, when we did the shooting with Shalene handgun course out in California, that's Shalene Nightingale, who's really the only true conservative candidate for governor in California. She's part of the Constitution Party. We did a fundraiser and a two-day handgun course out in Southern California and at Burrow Canyon Shooting Park. And Quince and his woman Kelly came out all the way from Pennsylvania. Now, the very first, official part of their, 4 month trip across the country and doing things was actually to come out and take this class in California. We had a lot of people out there. It was great. I had a bunch of really high-end staff out there, a bunch of great students. It was great to see Quince again. I get to see Quince probably once or twice a year. Generally, he comes out, does a little bit of training. Just a really great guy. Anyhow, he sends me a question that says, my backup AR-15 is an Eagle Arms, but I hate the stiff trigger. My Rock River AR-15 is perfect. Should I purchase a Rock River Arms trigger and install it in my Eagle Arms, or is there a better way to deal with this, Quince? Okay. Quince, I'm going to answer you that, and that is an excellent question. Just, by the way, those of you who have AR-15s, I need you to understand that the AR-15 design itself, the actual platform of the AR-15, is undoubtedly an incredibly, inherently unreliable system. Okay? When Stoeger designed this thing, one of the design features of this gun was to shoot a clean burning powder that offered no residual gun mess at all, i.e. carbon buildup. Here's what happens. If you burn gunpowder, you end up with carbon at the end. It's like burning a campfire. You have a campfire. When you're done with the campfire, you have ashes that are left over. That's the stuff that is now just basically pure carbon. It burns most of the stuff down, but you have something left over. In this case, it's ashes. Now, those ashes are carbon. That's what happens when things burn. They end up with carbon at the end, for the most part. So, when you shoot any standard gunpowder, you end up with carbon left over at the end. The AR-15 is a very tight, tolerant system. It's a closed-in system. It's a gas system, which means anything that is unburnt, such as unburnt powder or stuff that's left over as residual ash, meaning carbon, once the gunpowder is burnt, it blows back, gets into the bolt area, into the action, and it really messes things up. Then if there's moisture out there, it gums everything up. The AR-15 was designed to run with clean burning powder. Okay, the clean burning powder that's out there is called WinClean. And WinClean is an excellent powder. You're just not going to have found that years ago. When the U.S. military decided, okay, we're going to adopt the AR-15. We're going to get away from the M1A. We're going to go into the AR-15. The M16. Pardon me. We're going to get to the M16. AR-15 civilian version of the same gun. They put out a bid. They took it directly to DuPont, who was the best powder maker at the time, and gave them the formula for the clean burning powder that left no ashes left over, i.e. no carbon. And DuPont looked at it and said, you know, this is such an unbelievably tight tolerance that we would estimate a 40% rejection rate of the powder. We're not going to accept this contract. We will not make this. Which, to me, my immediate response if I was at DuPont would say, all right, well, we'll probably get a 40% rejection rate. It's okay. We just need to put those, some provisions to protect us in the bid. And then that 40% that's rejected, we move that on over to the civilian line so they have a very clean burning powder rather than a completely clean burning powder. See what I mean? You load the same stuff and it would be great for civilians because they're not in wartime. We're not experiencing Vietnam on the home front. We have to go to Vietnam to fight. Yet another land war fighting for other than patriotic interests. Anyhow. So, what we had McNamara as the Secretary of Defense at the time, and McNamara's a guy that got everybody doing the same thing. The same sorts of guns, the same kind of uniforms, same kind of boots, all across the military. Just the same stuff. And he really streamlined it. Very good business approach. What he said was, you know what? All the other powder has worked for years. We're just going to start running it with the other powder. Forget about DuPont, the bid, the gun, the clean burning powder, everything. So now they're running a gun with a powder that leaves residual effects. When they first sent the guns over to the troops in Vietnam, they didn't even send a cleaning kit because they said the gun will never need cleaning. Well, in very short order, they realized, yeah, the gun's all mucked up. So they had to scramble together some cleaning kits and scramble together those little cartoon, you know, pamphlets on how to clean your M16. As people are getting killed because the guns won't run because they're dirty. Because we're running dirty burning powder through them. Now, since then, since the mid-1960s, the M16 / now AR-15 AR-15 has actually come a lot further than the M16 in the military, just with all the accessories and different things we can do with finishes. I actually saw at a buddy of mine, Jim does AK-47, Jim Fuller. He was actually a guest last February, I think this past February. He called in and we did a full hour on the AK-47. You can go to the archives. Go to 2aradio.com. Click on the archives page. Go to last, I believe it was in February, early February, 5th, 6th, 7th, something like that. Jim Fuller called in, just an expert on the AK-47. I went to his shop a month or two after that, and he showed me an AR-15 that they were testing out that I believe it had the NP3 offered by Robar in the entire chamber around the bolt, bolt face, bolt carrier, all that stuff. And he showed me this gun. It was clean as could possibly be, and he said they had over 2,000 rounds through it. And there was no need to clean it because of the finish that was on there now. You could run dirty ammo, and the finish was clean. Anyhow, my point being that the AR-15 is an inherently unreliable gun. It's just the way that it's designed. So one of the things I have done through my years of training and expertise is put together a design on a gun that I call the Ronin AR-15. You can go to 2aradio.com and click on the Ronin tab, and it gives you all of the specs to tune your rifle up, your AR-15, into Ronin status, as I would refer to it. And what it is it's replacing a lot of the factory parts that you can get from a cheaper AR-15 all the way up to a really fancy AR-15, the right things to build. If you buy a lower, like LaRue has a wonderful billet machined lower, but they don't build the lower out. You have to build it out. Use these parts. There's some changes in the upper as well, but you use these parts and you end up having an inherently much more reliable AR-15 because the parts are much better. It's like building a Chevy 350 motor. You can use all the factory stuff, or you can get some aftermarket things and have a better motor that runs more reliably, it's more balanced, you get more power, more torque, and more longevity out of it. Burns less gas, runs through less oil, runs cooler. It's the same sort of mentality, same sort of idea. So, back to this whole thing with Quince. Quince, you can do one of a couple of things. You can either buy the Rock River Arms trigger that you already like, and keep in mind, triggers are like vehicles. Everybody likes something a little different. Some of the guys like this, some of the guys like that. It might be a brand. It might be a style of car. Like me, I like four-wheel drive trucks. I've always had a four-wheel drive truck around. I also like smaller, a little bit sportier cars that maybe get even a little bit better mileage sort of thing. I have one of each right now. So just keep in mind, those are my kinds of cars. I've had some sedans here and there, and there's a couple of sedans I like, but it's like that when it comes to triggers and guns, right? Like, I really dig Glock series pistols. I have a bunch of Glocks. There's other guns that are close to Glock. The Smith & Wesson M&P. The Kahr, if you want to go a little bit smaller, K-A-H-R. The Springfield XD. But I tend to stick to the Glock, just the way I am. So you can either buy the Rock River Arms trigger and drop that in to your lower, and you'll probably get pretty similar. Just realize the finish on the trigger surfaces are probably different. What I would really recommend is to pull your Rock River Arms trigger out and look at it and feel the finish which is on it. Then pull out the one out of your other gun. Let's see what, let me get back to the email here. That was your Eagle Arms. Okay. Pull out the trigger out of your Eagle Arms and inspect it, and see if the finish is rougher or somehow different. If it is, you might very well get away with about 1,200 grit wet dry sandpaper, something that you'd use on like a car finish. Put some oil on it, some sort of gun oil, and just go over the surface of the entire trigger just to smooth the rough parts out. Drop it back in, and you will probably have a very nice, comfortable trigger you're happy with in your Eagle Arms. And if that's the case, then why not take the Eagle Arms, turn that into a bit of your primary AR for a while, shoot that for the better part of a year so you're very familiar and very comfortable with it. So being a backup, it doesn't feel so strange and foreign. you've actually run the gun for a solid year whenever you're going out running stuff or, you know, doing any sort of dry practice or anything with the gun. So that's my suggestion, is to take it out, look at the trigger system. If it's dirty, clean it up with some 1200 grit wet dry sandpaper. Use it wet with some oil, and that's really all you need to do. If it's dimensionally different, or the sandpaper, sanding it down with a, you know, sanded oily 1200 grit paper doesn't work, then buy a new trigger and drop it in. But that should work. Another thing that you may want to check out is once you get the lower taken apart, and if you don't know how to do this, guys, there's actually some very, very good assembly, disassembly, reassembly videos that are on YouTube. There's some that really stink, you know, very home done, and they just really stink. But there's also some people who are good at teaching and also understand videography, and there's some good stuff. Usually I have to move around a little bit to find these things. And they may even very well show you these specific areas on the trigger in which to sand down and get things smoothed up. I usually go across the entire surface. If you've shot the gun enough, it'll show where the wear is, where it's starting to wear down on the surface, and you know to smooth that out. Anyhow, you can go on YouTube and look at a couple of videos on how to take things apart, look at it. They might even, I'm sure that there's a couple that show where to sand down to smooth things out. That might help you visually speaking. But that's my suggestion. You can also actually get into the internal area of the lower itself where the finish is and do a little bit of 1200 grit oiled up sandpaper all the way on the inside of the thing. Now, we're not looking to remove anything dimensionally. We're looking to smooth out the finish so it's nice and smooth. It might even get, honest to God, shiny, where the darker finish actually reflects a little bit of light. We're not trying to get through the finish to the metal. Don't do that. You want to smooth the finish that's on there. You don't want to penetrate through the finish. That is a no-no. Don't do that. Okay, that the finish that is over the aluminum actually helps to protect the aluminum. You don't want to go through that finish. Do not do that. Just smooth out what's on there. It doesn't take much, and it should be fine. So if anybody has a difficult AR-15 trigger, that's an option for you right there. Now, a lot of people go out and they'll buy like the Jewel trigger, whatever, which are these adjustable little triggers. Let me explain something to you. If you're putting something that is adjustable in a gun and replacing a factory part which is not adjustable, generally not advisable on anything that would be other than maybe like a tinker around unserious gun. Like maybe it's a competition gun, but you're not going to use it for some sort of self-protection or self-defense. If the day where society breaks down, maybe it's a weather event or social upheaval or rioting because of some court case or who knows what, you may need to have a gun available, your AR-15 in this case, for self-protection in case the evil comes and finds you. If you have a bunch of tricked out little adjustable devices on there, that all takes away from the reliability. Here's the thing, guys. If something is adjustable, the problem with it is, it adjusts. I don't have any adjustable sights on any of my handguns. I actually have a 1911 that originally came from the factory with an adjustable Bomar-style sight. Before I ever even shot the gun, I had it taken off and a Heine fixed rear sight put on. I had Heine's put on front and back. But I didn't want an adjustable sight because the thing is, an adjustable sight adjusts. I don't want that. I don't want an adjustable sight adjusting. I don't want an adjustable trigger in my AR-15 adjusting. So if you want to know all the provisions of all the different things you can do to bring your rifle up to Ronin status, go to 2aradio.com, click on the Ronin tab. It gives you all the parts out of Brownells and what the costs were for the parts, both retail and industry costs, if you happen to have get the industry break, that are listed. This is as of about a year or so ago. I'm sure the prices have adjusted. I may just want to remove those. But it'll give you an idea what it'll cost for the parts to do this. Now, I have assembled several lowers and uppers for friends and clients and other people. And these are the sort of parts that I'll have them buy and put the gun together. So right off the bat, they have a much more reliable gun. So there's my two cents. Quince, I hope that I spent the last 15 minutes or so answering your question well and provided a little bit more background and information for everyone else. Stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. We'll be right back. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
All right, guys, welcome back. Again, Know Thy Enemy. Here's a piece that says, don't weaken ATF's ability to police gun dealers. It says, 42 current and former New Jersey mayors have joined Mayors Against Illegal Guns, a group of 500 led by Michael Bloomberg of New York, scumbag we talked about yesterday, that opposes a bill that would gut the already weakened Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. One of the strongest regulatory agencies in the history of the country, and they're saying it's weakened, obviously, hugely anti-gun person writing this. They said, known as the ATF Reform Bill and Firearms Modernization Act, this piece of legislation, the measure, should be called the ATF Neutralizing Act, because it would limit significantly the agency's ability to keep illegal guns off the streets. Hearings are expected to start in the Senate this month. Really? Okay. It would inhibit their ability to keep illegal guns off the streets. So how? Well, let's see if they can explain this. Of the nation's 100,000 licensed gun dealers, approximately 10% are audited by the ATF each year. The one bullet in the ATF's chamber allows the agency, which cannot levy fines, to revoke a dealer's license. But that happens in only about 100 times a year. They're right. What happens is the ATF doesn't levy fines. They can either ignore a violation or they suspend your license. There is no fining. It's either all or nothing, which is lousy and sorry. And whatever industry the person who wrote this is in would agree if they were facing the same problems. They say the proposed law would permit the ATF to fine and revoke licenses, but the ATF could act only against dealers who willfully commit violations, a difficult burden of proof, and the ATF would also have to issue repeated warnings first. Well, that's right, guys. I know an FFL dealer who lost their license because an ATF agent went in, looked at their 4473s, and where somebody had county, they put USA instead of Clark because it was in Las Vegas. They revoked their federal firearms license because of that. Because they have the regulatory authority to do just that. So, all I have to say is the ATF reform bill must go through, and whoever wrote this, if the ATF or some other agency had only, we could allow you to stay in business or we have to shut you down and put everybody out of business, whatever industry this writer is in, the government had the same regulatory authority to do what the ATF does to gun dealers, they would be singing a much, much different tune. We need to end this and pass this legislation.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you, in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The two-way radio show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2ARadio.com. I will not.